Yeah, we got a lot to get to. We could go for a while. In another life, which is starting this week, I do a lot of other radio shows that are more than 40 minutes, and I could fill up a three-hour show with what we've got going on today. Justin Hall, Randy Page here with you. We are back. It is Wednesday, August 13th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. It's been a while since we talked to Nancy Mace, Congresswoman Nancy Mace. That was our last show, and in that, I said, if you want to make an announcement today, Congresswoman, this is a safe space for you. You can do that here if you'd like. And she said, no, we're going to wait. We're going to, you know, we'll make that decision closer to the end of the summer. Well, she made that decision and announced it about 2 weeks later.
Yes.
And that has really filled out the race. So what we're going to do here for the governor's race side of things, we're going to look at who the candidates are. And maybe some different news items. We've got some polling here we can look at. And then I'm going to ask the gold question, and there's a reason why it's the gold question, here at the end. So, Randy, here are your candidates to become the next governor of the state of South Carolina. Now, again, in case you aren't aware, the general election is scheduled for November 3rd, 2026. The primary will be held that June. So June of 2026 will be the primary. And I'm not going to say that determines who the next governor is, but
it determines who the next governor is.
Okay. Henry McMaster is term limited. We have term limits here in South Carolina. You cannot serve more than two terms as a governor. He took the office, by the way. You ready for this? He took office on January 24, 2017.
Wow.
He will leave office in January of 2027. That is insane.
Absolutely.
That's when Nikki Haley resigned to become the UN ambassador. And then he won two full terms after that. So he is going to become, he is the longest serving governor in the state of South Carolina's history. Here is who is running to replace him. And this appears to be in alphabetical order, according to the list I have in front of me. Pamela Evatt, the lieutenant governor of the state of South Carolina, for the entire full terms of Governor McMaster. By the way, we are in contact with the Evatt campaign. Look forward to having her on the program here very soon. Josh Kimbrell, state senator from the 11th district, that's Spartanburg. He won his first election for that in 2020. He won re-election again in 2024. Congresswoman Nancy Mace is the U.S. representative from our first congressional district. That's down in Charleston. She won that seat previously, then lost it, then won it again. So she is back in the saddle there, and she was a candidate for the U.S. Senate in 2014 as well, in case you were interested in that. She is running. Ralph Norman, congressman from the 5th Congressional District. He is a former House member in South Carolina, as is Nancy Mace. He's running, and then the current Attorney General of South Carolina, the longest-serving Attorney General in South Carolina history, Alan Wilson, is also running for governor. He started his position after the 2010 election. So he's been serving as the Attorney General for quite some time. He is a known entity. I would say he's one of the most known entities of the ones I just listed, Randy. But again, from your perspective of those running, that's the core five. I don't think we're going to see any more throw their names in. Maybe one, maybe two. But what's your take on those five names that are listed?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, as you aptly pointed out, the seat hasn't been open for a while. And so McMaster, you know, will leave office as the longest serving governor in state history. So, you know, looking at name ID, which is really what polls are judging at this point, you know, I think probably Nancy Mace, even though she's a congresswoman from the 1st Congressional District, has an advantage just because of her social media presence that's probably unmatched by any of the other candidates at this point. You know, obviously being an incumbent attorney general, obviously, Alan Wilson has been active for a number of years on some really big issues that we care about and is well known throughout the state. Then you have, you know, your lieutenant governor who, you know, has served with Governor McMaster for 8 years mm-hmm. and, you know, has spent those 8 years really getting to know people around South Carolina as well. You know, State Senator Josh Kimbrell. You know, obviously, state senator from Spartanburg, the most populous area of South mm-hmm. Carolina, being from the upstate, and then Congressman Ralph Norman from the growing, you know, York County and that 5th congressional district, and he really, you know, has been quite active across the state for a while in different political things. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what comes up, and obviously, you know, as we mentioned before we came on, the Silver Elephant Gala for the state mm-hmm. party was this yeah. past weekend. And, you know, I'm not going to say that certain people weren't there, but there were certain people that I didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I saw the Lieutenant Governor, Pamela Evett. I saw Congressman Norman, and I saw Attorney General Alan Wilson. I did not see Nancy Mace, nor did I see Josh Kimbrough. Now, that's not to say that they weren't there. Mm-hmm. You know, on the U.S. Senate side, yeah. You know, I did see Paul Dantz, and obviously I saw, you know, Senator Graham, because Senator Graham spoke and featured a phone call from President Trump. I did not see Mark Lynch, not sure if he was there or not, but that was just kind of my observations from this past Saturday night in Columbia.
So you mentioned the Senate race, and we'll get to that in just a second, because I think there are a lot of races here. By the way, Nancy Mace running from the first to run for governor is going to – she's not running from the first. She's going to leave her position as a congresswoman in the first district to run for governor, because she can't run two races at the same time. So that seat's going to come open.
Right.
The fifth is going to come open because Ralph Norman is running for governor. We already know that State Senator Wes Clymer is running for that congressional seat. That – if you're unaware, in this office, former colleague now up in North Carolina, Mitch Prosser, and I have talked on multiple occasions, Wes Clymer was destined to be the congressman in the fifth. It's just, if it just makes that much sense, it just makes that much sense. And he will, I can say this, it's a nonpartisan answer. I think Wes Clymer is a fantastic lawmaker and will do a great job if he's elected to Congress. In the first, another interesting setup there because that seat bounces blue and red often. I'm gonna list who's represented that seat in no particular order: Nancy Mace, Joe Cunningham, Nancy Mace, Mark Sanford.
Yes.
What is going on in that seat? That's going to be an interesting race. Obviously, Annie Andrews ran against Nancy Mace in the last go round. Of course, she's running to become the U.S. Senate seat holder on the Democratic side against Lindsey Graham. And that's going to open up that first congressional seat. It appears that House Rep Mark Smith is going to run to replace Nancy Mace on that seat. So, again, a lot of moving parts here as we go. Interesting to note on the candidates for the governor's race, to circle back there really quick, if I can Jen Psaki for a second. I'm just looking really quickly at previous lieutenant governors. And this is a very interesting setup. So, Andre Bauer was a previous lieutenant governor under Mark Sanford. And he came very close to being governor just by way of some flights and Appalachian Trail stuff. But after him, very interesting, the next lieutenant governor resigned. Then it was vacant. Then the next one resigned. And then you had Henry, who succeeded to the governorship upon Nikki's resignation to become UN ambassador.
Right.
And then Kevin Bryant served out that remaining role when he was elevated. And then Pamela Evett has served in that role ever since. And she was the first lieutenant governor to be elected on the ticket with the governor. We do tickets now in South Carolina, which again, just makes sense.
Absolutely.
So what I'm getting to there is there's been a level of stability in South Carolina politics for the better part of a decade that we didn't have beforehand. I'll just put it that way. There was a lot of resignations in the executive branch. We had, obviously, some very interesting scandals take place. I'll use that term.
Yes.
Early in my childhood, really. And we've seen a level of stability here. And that leads to where this governor's race sits right now. And early polling coming, again, this is early polling, y'all. Right. And we're just getting into this. But it's important. I think polling matters. This survey that was conducted by Targo's Market Research, I think I ignored their phone call this day, 51% of respondents self-identified as Republicans, 33% as Democrats, 15% as Independents. And this poll found that Nancy Mace had a slight edge. 16% of the respondents say they would vote for her if the GOP primary was held that day. Alan Wilson was second with 15%. Pamela Evett with 8%, followed by Ralph Norman with 6%, and Josh Kimbrough rounding it out with 3%. Mace, of course, this was before Mace had even officially declared that she was running for governor, but now she has. We have our 5. The golden question here in this race, Randy, is who does the big guy endorse? And here's why I ask the question, and here's the conversations I have with people all the time. You could say it's a foregone conclusion, but I don't believe it is. Pamela Evett, Lieutenant Governor to Henry McMaster. Henry McMaster was the first statewide elected official in the country to endorse Donald Trump in 2015. He has not forgotten that.
Correct.
Period. That is not forgotten on him. Alan Wilson, his father, is the congressman from the 2nd. And to his own credit, Attorney General Wilson has worked hand in glove with the Trump administration two different occasions as being a part of the Republican Attorney General's group. Ralph Norman is a sitting congressman. Now, he has he worked against on the Big Beautiful Bill,
right.
But eventually after that White House meeting, he came around.
Right.
But he is, and he also endorsed Nikki Haley in 2024.
Right.
Nancy Mace, if there's someone who has changed their opinion on Donald Trump multiple times, it would be the congresswoman.
That is correct.
I'm not spreading innuendo or rumor. That has happened. But she is clearly in his camp right now.
Right.
Josh Kimbrell was a very big supporter of Ron DeSantis in 2024.
Correct.
Before Ron DeSantis dropped out of the race, and then he was fully behind Donald Trump, as everyone was once sure. their preferred candidates dropped out, whether it was Vivek Ramaswamy or Ron DeSantis, whomever. So the question becomes, of those five, who does the 47th president endorse for governor?
And I think, I was asked that question by a reporter actually Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And, I said, I don't want to pretend to be Donald Trump. I don't want to pretend that I think like Donald Trump. I said, but I think if you kind of boil it down, it comes down to, there really are two, in my opinion, that are in the race for the Trump endorsement. I think it's really between the Attorney General, who, as you mentioned, has helped the president a good bit, and, whose father is a sitting member of the U.S. Congress, and the lieutenant governor, who has been, a loyal soldier for Governor McMaster, who's been a loyal soldier for President Trump. The question is, would there be an endorsement in the actual primary, or would he wait until the runoff? I would think, particularly if those two are neck and neck at the top, he would probably wait until the runoff. But again,
mm-hmm.
we got a while on that, and it'll be interesting to see how that comes down. But I don't want to pretend to say that I know what he will do, but that would be at least a logical explanation of what mm-hmm. could happen.
And it would be uncommon for him to endorse two people. He did correct. That in Arizona.
That's correct.
So, again, he might not feel the need to throw his hat in the ring on this one, just because it's almost a certified, confirmed thing that a Republican's going to be the next governor. But eventually that will change. I tell people all the time, eventually South Carolina will have a Democratic governor again. I don't know when, but it will eventually happen. Speaking of that, a Charleston lawyer has become the first Democrat to officially enter the 2026 governor's race. So that brings the field to six. By the way, it would be seven, but Thomas Ravenel entered and then dropped within like 48 hours.
Correct. And it was quite the interesting entrance, too.
It was.
I mean, it literally was, I'm going to roll out a video. And that was all it was.
Yeah.
It was just a video. And a video that really didn't even mention if he was a Republican or a Democrat, which was very interesting to think about.
So, Mullins McLeod, a lawyer, an attorney from the Lowcountry, specifically Charleston, is among the lawyers who helped negotiate that $88 million settlement for the victims of the Mother Emanuel shooting
right.
back in 2015. He launched his governor's mansion bid with a three-minute YouTube video on Monday. That's according to the SC Daily Gazette. I want to thank Jessica Holman, who wrote this, but specifically Shauna Adcox, who runs that operation, does a very good job. So, what is the Democrat from Charleston saying? Well, he joined Republican candidates calling for the elimination of the state's personal income tax. Income taxes are expected to provide more than $6.5 billion this fiscal year. Zeroing that out would slash 45% of the state's general fund. And at the same time as saying this, he wants to almost double teachers' salaries. He says there is a cure. The job is curing a cancer that has infiltrated our government for the last 25 years, he said in the campaign video. The cancer he's referring to is, quote, corruption, and state lawmakers bowing to corporations that have lobbied to, quote, rig the system for their own financial gains. Though he doesn't say it, the 25 years references how long Republicans have controlled both chambers and the state house after the 2000 elections. The party switching of a single Democrat gave the GOP control of the Senate. The last Democrat in the governor's mansion left the office in 2003. But in the video, he didn't call himself a Republican or a Democrat. And he doesn't mention either party either. Public money should be only used for public good, he added. Now, there is a hurdle that the Charleston lawyer will have to overcome.
A small hurdle.
Depending on your version of small, he was arrested 3 months ago.
Yes, he was.
In May, McLeod, this is according to the article, McLeod was charged with disorderly conduct in a downtown Charleston area near the Battery, according to the Post and Courier. Officers said McLeod was wearing nothing but underwear and shoes and yelling at the top of his lungs. McLeod's lawyer told a judge that the erratic behavior stemmed from a mental health episode and exhaustion. Well, and if it was a mental health episode, we pray that he gets the help that he needs and that he has done that in the 3 months since then. It, for this podcast host, it does raise the question of how you would handle the governor's chair. But that's beside the point. Again, hopefully he got the help he needed. He declined to comment on the situation to the Daily Gazette, but told them, quote, I was not in my underwear, end quote. Well, if that's not a slogan for a governor's race, I don't know what is. McLeod 2026, I was not in my underwear. All right, we're moving on. The U.S. Senate race is underway. And yet again, as we do every 6 years, we ask the question, is anyone going to dethrone Lindsey Graham? The answer to that question is no. In my opinion, and I could be wrong here, Randy, but in politics, specifically in this kind of state, once you've won that second election, not your first reelection campaign, but your second one. So if you're Lindsey Graham, you're talking your first six, your second six, your third six, which was the 2020 election, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Once you've won that one, maybe for the Senate it's a little different. Maybe it's the second one. But certainly for the House, once you win that third one, you're kind of set in stone, a la Joe Wilson, or right. Even a Ralph Norman if he had chosen to.
Right.
Because people know you.
Right.
No one wants to run against the war chest.
Right.
Those that do are doomed to failure, it seems.
Right.
So the question's always, South Carolinians always have major problems with Lindsey Graham. Until it's time to push the button. And that's just being honest.
Yes.
We can see it in the polling. We can see it in the public opinion data. It's just the way it is. So, he is running, obviously, again. South Carolina's very powerful in the United States Senate right now.
Incredibly powerful.
Let me just put that out there.
Yes.
The two senators from a small state of South Carolina are very, very important to a Republican majority, and specifically to forwarding the Republican agenda in said Congress.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at it, they each chair a committee, and I believe the U.S. Senate only has 16 standing committees?
Yes.
And so South Carolinians chair two of the 16.
Which is an astounding number.
Yes, it is.
It's an astounding number. Now, there are opponents for this seat. One that I thought was the biggest potential opponent was former Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer,
right,
who has been relatively out of the political scene since 2006 when he left the Lieutenant Governor's chair. I actually got to meet him at a previous Palmetto Family event when former Vice President Mike Pence was here. Yep. Got to meet him there. But after a brief campaign, he posted 4 days ago on his official Facebook page, after deep prayer and reflection, I have decided to suspend my campaign for the United States Senate. This decision did not come lightly. I entered this race with a servant's heart, believing that our nation needs leaders who are grounded in truth, integrity, and faith. But I believe now more than ever that in order for us to truly move forward, we must stop tearing one another down with lies and division. I cannot and will not be a part of a political climate that rewards deception over honesty or ambition over unity. God calls us to walk in truth, to speak life, and to be peacemakers, not power seekers. If we are going to win, truly win, it won't be through slander or selfish gain. It will be through unity, humility, and a shared desire to honor God and serve one another. I pray the remaining candidates can do just that. I'm deeply grateful to all who supported my campaign and my family and I over the years. Very interesting.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was
statement.
It was interesting statement, and obviously an abrupt exit.
Yeah,
And in full disclosure, I did serve as chief of staff to Andre Bauer when he was lieutenant governor. So I want to make that very clear to the audience. You know, I will say, you know, when I worked for him, he was an incredible conservative, both fiscally and on the social issues. And, you know, I've always appreciated hearing his opinions on things. He's a good friend, and wish him and his family all the best.
Now, there is another opponent. There are two of them, Mark Lynch and Paul Dans. Who is Paul Dans? And that's been the question I've seen on social media for quite some time from South Carolina politicos, they know, and South Carolina voters. Who is Paul Dans? The architect of Project 2025, and this is from the New York Times. I'm quoting Maggie Haberman here, which I never get to do. Quote, the right-wing blueprint that Democrats made a rallying cry is mounting a primary challenge to Lindsey Graham, saying he isn't sufficiently devoted to President Trump's political movement, which is interesting because Donald Trump has given Lindsey Graham his full endorsement.
Yes.
I'm not questioning it.
Correct.
I'm not questioning it at all.
Right.
That's the thing about Donald Trump's endorsements, and the thing that's interesting about the Make America Great Again, America First movement now in the second iteration of Donald Trump presidency is that he's kind of the architect of the America First thing.
Correct.
Is he the architect of nation first conservatism? No, certainly not. This isn't a new idea. However, the way he has orchestrated it and effectuated it is pretty spectacular, considering he never held a political office before in his life. So if the guy who is the president, who's sitting in the big chair, endorses Lindsey Graham fully, calls him on the phone, I assume he called him on Saturday, or did Lindsey call him?
I believe the president called.
Okay, the president called. That was obviously he knew what was happening.
Correct.
He knew where he was, and he probably knew who was in the room. And he says, you have my full endorsement, Lindsey. He's great. He's wonderful. Great golf game. It's kind of hard for me to take you seriously when you say, well, he's not fully for. And we could have our own opinions about the senator from the upstate. Sure, that's fine. It just doesn't appear like that's going to stick, in my opinion. And good luck to Mr. Dans, again, one of the major authors of the Project 2025, which, again, for all the belly aching and all the boogeymanning, I mean, if you actually take the time to look through it, it's kind of just conservatism.
Yes, it really is.
in how you govern. It's not crazy.
And I think, you know, going back to, you know, talking about Silver Elephant, obviously I met Paul Dans at the Silver Elephant, got to talk to him very, very briefly. And I think, you know, one of the greatest things about being, you know, in a setup like we have here in South Carolina as Americans is the ability to meet you know, all of these candidates, you know, and to interact with them in a very personal manner. And so, you know, I'm not endorsing in any of these elections this cycle, neither is Palmetto Family.
Correct.
I want to make that very clear. However, I've told each of the candidates that I plan on attending a number of their events because I want to get to know them better and to hear from them what their passions are, how they want to lead, whether it's as governor, whether it's as attorney general, whether it's as comptroller general, whether it's U.S. Senate. And I think that's important. I mean, it's important for voters to be able to go to, you know, whether it's a barbecue, whether it's a, you know, a rally of some sort, you know, kind of kick the tires on the candidate, see what they're made of, hear how they're going to do. And really, as small of a state as South Carolina is, the average citizen has an incredible opportunity to get to meet these candidates one-on-one. And I would encourage each of you to, you know, get out from behind your keyboards and go and see these people in person, talk to them, ask questions, and I think the state will be better for it.
Agreed. And South Carolina does really well in figuring out which candidates are best and who the candidates are that most represent their values.
Absolutely.
That's why South Carolina's picked 10 of the last 11 Republican candidates for president.
That's correct.
And the one year they swung and missed was 2008 when we picked Newt Gingrich. It might have been 2012.
It's 2012.
12. It was 12. Right. Newt Gingrich won South Carolina. Mitt Romney went on to be the candidate. Who's to say that South Carolina was wrong? In that. I digress. All right. Let's get to some education news. What do you want to hit first, Randy? Do you want to hit the teacher? Sorry. Do you want to cover the teacher story, or do you want to cover the book situation?
Why don't we talk about, you know, the storied book bans?
Okay. So there's this thing where if you decide that a book is not suitable for children and you remove it from the classroom or the school library, then you are banning the book. Let me explain something to you about book bans. None of these books are ineligible for purchase. And if you want your children to read these books for whatever reason, you can still do that.
There's this thing called Amazon.
They're all available. Let me read you something from, this is from WLTX, friend of the program, Josie Frost, wrote this article. As a new school year begins, South Carolina is entering its second year with a regulation that allows state and local school boards to remove books and other materials from classrooms. In the year since the regulation went into effect, according to the ACLU of South Carolina, the state now leads the nation in the number of state-mandated book bans. In the past year, the state review board has reviewed 27 books. Of those, 21 were completely removed from school shelves. One was placed under parental restriction, and 5 were allowed to remain.
And of those 21, we literally could not read those on broadcast TV or radio.
Correct. You couldn't even read them on the House floor or the Senate floor because it would be considered improper.
Correct.
Okay. But the children should read them, right?
Absolutely.
Jason Raven, a spokesman for the Department of Education, in a statement to News 19 said, quote, "Sexually explicit materials have no place in South Carolina's public schools," end quote.
That's great. Period. Full stop.
So this policy lets parents ask school boards to review any book or instructional material that they believe is age appropriate. Wow. Parents having the ability to determine what their children have access to in the public school that their tax dollars pay for.
Revolutionary.
What a novel idea.
Revolutionary.
What a novel idea. Paul Bowers with the ACLU of South Carolina says the policy has created a new avenue for censorship and restricts learning materials accessible to students. This is where we are 1 year into this, and it's not serving students, Bowers said. It's dragging our state backward for no reason. I love how everything that reverts back to the way things used to be, in terms of just parents having the ability to determine what's best for their children, is a backwards way of thinking. That's the progressivism. That's the annoyance for me. Supporters of the regulation say it empowers parents. Palmetto Family issued this statement to this article. Over the past year, parents and citizens have identified several examples that are not age and developmentally appropriate. Because of their vigilance, the State Board of Education has been able to act decisively to protect children from inappropriate material. There have been a range of reviewed classics, Romeo and Juliet, but then newer fantasy books like A Court of Thorns and Roses series have all been reviewed. Again, I'm not saying you can't read these books.
Right.
Some of these books have material in them that aren't suitable for certain ages. I don't believe that A Court of Thorn and Roses, the book series, should be in an elementary school library.
Correct.
I get that fifth graders are 10 and 11 years old. I still don't believe they should be reading those books.
Correct.
It's just, I don't know, just my opinion. Now, the ACLU does give a list of the books that were banned. I'm using air quotes. You can't see me. Collateral by Ellen Hopkins, Empire of Storms, Half of a Yellow Sun, Hopeless by Colleen Hoover. No Colleen Hoover book should be in a school library. Okay. Identical, Kingdom of Ash, Last Night at the Telegraph Club, Living Dead Girl, Lucky, and Tricks. Previously on March 13th, the IMRC recommended banning these 10 titles. Again, banning. Which deems any book containing a description of sexual conduct age inappropriate for all students from kindergarten through 12th grade. That's what they were citing here. The board previously voted to remove or restrict access to the following titles, and there are a ton on here, including Flamer, All Boys Aren't Blue, and then A Court of Thorns and Roses, like a bunch of those books, and Push by Sapphire. We've talked about all of these books in some way, shape, or form over the last several years. Again, I want to remind the ACLU, these books are not banned. They have been removed from libraries due to their age and appropriateness for children. If the ACLU would like to provide these books for children, they can do so by purchasing them and delivering them to the students outside of the school, if they so choose.
And I just really appreciate, you know, the efforts of the State Board of Education and the State Superintendent for what they're doing with this particular policy, and in helping, you know, parents and citizens around the state to provide materials that are both age and developmentally appropriate for our children.
Exactly. Exactly. Now we moved we now move to the story about the teacher from Dorchester County, or the almost teacher from Dorchester County. Let's talk about this one. I got to be careful here on this one, because this is one of those stories where I could be really tongue-in-cheek, and I don't want to be, because it's a serious thing. So, this school, Joseph R. Pye Elementary School, which is in Dorchester County.
It's Dorchester 2, I believe.
Yes. This is in the metropolitan capital of Ladson. 26,000 students in this school district, which is based in Somerville. The elementary school in question here is home to 835 students from pre-K, so 4K, to 5th grade. On July 29th, Chris Jackson of Houston, Texas, was announced as Pye's new art teacher extraordinaire. I will read you the Facebook post that has now been deleted. Hailing from Houston, Texas, Miss Jackson is a former dancer and current artist with multiple degrees in sequential art from Savannah College of Art and Design, or SCAD. If you get off of 95 and you drive into downtown Savannah, you can't miss SCAD. It's right there. I would go that way to the Savannah Banana Games. And is ready to share their love for creativity, comics, and design with our students. Book emoji, video game emoji, thread emoji. Outside the classroom, Miss Jackson enjoys cross-stitching, gaming, and working on their dream of becoming a published graphic novelist. Are there more than one person? Let's show Miss Jackson some JPES love. Hashtag JPES family. Hashtag art matters. Hashtag creativity counts. And then there's a picture of Miss Jackson. So this is all listed. And so far, I'm cool.
Sure.
Cool. I'm fine. I'm a little confused by the grammar. Miss Jackson, Chris Jackson, celebrated the hiring on the left-leaning social media app Blue Sky. After months of unemployment, I'm so thrilled to announce I'm starting as an elementary art teacher this August, they wrote, inviting followers to help them, quote, get my room ready by purchasing items on a classroom wish list. All teachers do that these days. While it's unclear what sort of art Jackson is planning on teaching students at Pye, this coming from Fitz News, the tastes of Miss Jackson include violent graphic cartoons depicting violence against children and cartoons which push same-sex relationships also involving children. One cartoon wrote, I knew I liked girls, but I never felt like one, end quote.
Wow.
Another cartoon posted referenced a lesbian protagonist who was constantly engaging in a weird, time-consuming, drawn-out ritual of self-harm.
This is an elementary school we're talking about.
Yes. So, when, according to another source, when parents confronted the administrators of Joseph Pye Elementary, the admins went to the teacher about it. And after discussion with the, quote, non-binary teacher, she decided to hide her social media accounts, making them private. Prior to the parents' scrubbing, though, parents were able to download all manner of content, including some harsh invectives directed at elected officials, including current gubernatorial candidate Nancy Mace, where she called Nancy Mace a not nice word. That's not the quote. I'm filling it in because I can't say it.
You censored it.
I censored it. I do have a bleep button, but I can't even use the bleep button for this one. I do that for other people. This continues on. This is very interesting. Another post featured on the social media page mocked Christianity, depicting a Sonic the Hedgehog figure tied to a cross hung on a wall. And Jackson wrote, quote, RIP Jesus, you would have loved Trans Day of Visibility. But most of the parents that Fitz News has spoken with didn't blame Jackson for the controversy. One parent said, quote, she's been put in a position where she shouldn't have been because she wasn't vetted properly. Another parent said, how many red flags do we need? Who the heck else is working at our school? What is going on in this school is the real question. Other parents were less understanding of the artwork. Quote, she's sick and disturbed. She shouldn't be within a mile of a school, let alone inside a school with a position of authority and influence. Other parents who spoke with us claimed the school, after tipping off the teacher to the complaints, was dismissive of their concerns. One parent said, quote, we were told, quote, Chris would never do anything to harm the children, and she invites parents to meet her and look at the room. like the internet, Jackson's room appears to have been scrubbed as well. According to sources to Fitz News, the classroom had pictures of different lesbian cartoon animals posted on the wall, but they're not there anymore.
Mm.
It's not that they just dropped the ball and hired this person, said one parent. It's that they are trying to gaslight us into thinking there's nothing wrong with them dropping the ball and hiring this person. Conservatives in the Palmetto State, as Fitz News is posting here, has been fighting for years to clean up South Carolina schools, saying teachers and administrators need to focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic, not hypersexualized literature, gender-bending ideology, and furry fantasies. Calls to Dorchester District 2 were not immediately returned to Fitz News.
Wow, that was hard to hear.
What do you? I mean,
as a parent, that was hard to hear.
How do you?
Well, all I can say is I hope that the administration and the members of that school board get a spine and do what's right.
You would hope.
Yes.
I mean, this again. The State Department of Education just took over a school district in Jasper,
right?
Due to financial negligence, I would argue this is personnel negligence. I'm not advocating for the takeover of the school district. I'm just saying that these kind of things, if you want to build credibility for your institution, and it's the institution of public education, which since 2020 has taken a nosedive, don't hire people like this. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. And again, you can call that discriminatory, but I don't know. The subject matter kind of speaks for itself, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And particularly, you know, I know we're just audio today, but when you look at some of these depictions, I mean, they're revolting, they're concerning, especially when you realize this isn't something that's shared between adults, but it's something that is there for children, and that these are the types of things that are out there for children, and these are elementary school children. That's a problem.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that teachers, I just don't understand this current infatuation with teachers having to talk about their personal lives with their students. And that, well, my students need to know me. No, they don't. No, they don't. No, they really, really don't. I thought, I grew up, honestly, all throughout elementary school, until about fourth, fifth grade, right? I thought the teachers lived at the school. Wow. Like in kindergarten and first grade, I just thought they lived at the school. Sure. I knew no different.
Right.
Do you know why? Because when I showed up to school as a kindergartner, as a first grader, it was all about the theme of the classroom, which was in some way educational.
Sure.
My kindergarten teacher's name was Miss McDonald, so there were golden arches outside of the room, and we were our classroom mascot was a bear, and in third grade it was owls, because that's what your job is. Your job is to mold young minds and to teach them the things they need to know to get through life. Your job is not to tell them all about your sexual proclivities.
Correct.
Period. Correct. End of discussion. Okay. Now we have some upheaval in the State House.
Right. Lots of upheaval.
Lots of upheaval. And again, things that don't normally happen. I'll go ahead and tell you that if Representative Mark Smith runs for the congressional seat, he might resign his seat in order to run for that seat.
Correct.
Now he doesn't have to do that.
Right.
He could just not run again, keep his seat, and run for Congress.
Correct.
That's possible.
It is.
However, if you really want to soak your teeth into running, and you don't want your voting record held against you,
absolutely,
you might want to resign your seat.
That's
okay.
Right.
So we have a couple of situations here. And the first one I want to talk about is the one that's been hanging like a cloud over the State House for the last year. Last August, the representative from District 88, at that time my district, this was my representative R.J. May, his house was raided, electronic material was confiscated, that was it. For a year, this circulated.
Right.
We didn't really know the situation. Of course, in June, the U.S. Attorney's Office accused May of sharing multiple might be a small word.
Correct.
A significant amount of what is called CSAM, child sexual abuse material. He was denied bond. He's remaining in custody until his trial. So he is currently in jail.
Correct.
In Elgin, I believe. I think that's correct.
Edgefield.
That's one of the E's.
Yes.
Edgefield. So he has resigned, which is what now the House caucus, Republican caucus of the House, had launched a ethics investigation.
Right.
And that's going to be ongoing. That's still going to happen to determine what this is and what happened here while he was still in office. Because I think there are some questions that need to be answered. So, but he wrote a letter to Speaker Merle Smith saying, I'm resigning my seat. And as a former constituent in District 88, it was a wide understanding that District 88 was wildly underrepresented for the better part of a year, year and a half.
Sure.
And again, there could be multiple reasons for that, whether it's whether or not this happening or the formation of the Freedom Caucus. And then, of course, you don't have any really any major seats on committees. That's part of it, too. The whole thing. I think a lot of that wraps into one when it comes to how people in the district felt. And I can tell you how people in the district felt because I have family still living in the district and I used to live in the district up until March. So he's no longer going to be a representative for the 88th district, which means that's going to have a special election.
Right.
And that seat will be filled before January.
Yes.
Which is very important.
I think just before Christmas, correct?
Just before Christmas. I think
December 23rd, I think.
I think so. Election, which get ready rough. Get yeah. ready for that voter turnout. 1%. Maybe you should vote absentee.
Yes.
Maybe you should vote early. Maybe you should vote early or vote absentee. Even if you're not going to be out of town, you just don't want to forget about it. Another seat that's going to be open is going to be District 21 in the South Carolina House of Representatives. It's because Bobby Cox is resigning his seat. We'll get to why he's resigning his seat in a minute, but he will be resigning his seat, and he is. I'm going to go ahead and bury the lead here because we're going to hold off the last one here until the end. So let me try to awkwardly bury the lead here. But Bobby Cox posted on his Bobby Cox for SC Senate page on Facebook, when I served with the U.S. Army Rangers, our creed shaped everything we did. Rangers lead the way. It meant never quitting, never backing down, and charging toward the fight. And he says that's the kind of leadership Columbia needs. I'm ready to take that same grit, discipline, and results-driven leadership to the state Senate, just like I did in the House and in the Army. This isn't about titles, he says. It's about service, sacrifice, and doing what's right. I ask for your support for Senate District 12, the Republican primary, is October the 21st. I haven't seen anybody else announce a candidacy for this seat.
Neither have I.
I assume more are coming.
Probably.
Because it's one of 46.
Strict.
And it's a Senate seat. And if you get the opportunity to sit in the House of Lords,
right.
you'll feel pretty good.
Right.
So that's two, maybe even three seats in the state House of Representatives that will be filled, vacant and or filled. Obviously, they'll be filled before the second half of the legislative session. Right. None of those threaten us a majority.
No.
I don't believe any of those are really in danger, including that seat Mark Smith is in, if he chooses to resign his seat. I don't believe any of those are in danger of even flipping.
Correct.
But the reason why Bobby Cox is running for the state Senate seat and resigning his House seat in order to do so is because just on Monday, State Senator Roger Nutt resigned his seat.
Right.
And that was for a completely different reason.
Yeah, it was really sad, you know, Monday to see Senator Nutt send in his resignation just because of having a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's. He's 59 years old, and he had been being treated for what he thought were, you know, long COVID symptoms, and then the doctors let him know that it was Alzheimer's. And I've known Roger for, you know, over a decade, probably over two decades now. He served in Spartanburg County Council for a number of years. He served in the state House and then was just finished his first year in the state Senate. Just an incredible family man, incredible Christian brother. Going to be just a really, you know, difficult time. And, you know, I was texting back and forth with him on Monday just to, you know, let him know how much I appreciate his service and his friendship, and I'd be praying for him and just really want to encourage, you know, our listeners, you know, that, you know, regardless of politics, regardless of anything else, you know, this is a brother that's going through a hard time, you know, please keep him and his family in your prayers, and just really want to wish Senator Nutt and his family all the best. Know that we're praying for him and we love him.
Nutt, in his statement, Senator Nutt said, while we are saddened by this news, we will face this trial with faith in the grace of God that has sustained our lives, our marriage, and my career in public service for nearly 15 years. The filing for this seat will open on August 29th. If the primaries are needed, they will be October 21st. And as we mentioned earlier, the special election will be December 23rd. In a statement, Senate President Thomas Alexander said, "I was deeply saddened to learn of Senator Nutt's resignation and the circumstances that led to his decision. In the time I had the privilege to serve alongside him, I was struck by his knowledge, tireless work ethic, and unwavering commitment to his constituents." He filled this seat that was held by Senator Scott Talley, who opted not to seek a third term, and Talley asked Nutt to run for the seat to replace him. And all of these elections will be at the same time. So the seat of former Rep. R.J. May will be at the same time as well. So all of these are going on at the same time. Nutt would go on in his letter to write, quote, "It is hard to describe how much I have enjoyed my time in the Senate. Serving in the Senate has been a dream come true, and I am so proud to be a small part of this great body." During this session, he sponsored a bill that would allow nursing home residents to select one person who would be allowed to continue visiting them in case of an emergency such as another pandemic. Because even in South Carolina during COVID-19 and 2020, people, you weren't allowed to go see your loved ones in the nursing home. And that hit close to home for us. Yes. in a couple of different situations. And more than a year went by without some people seeing their loved ones. That bill passed the Senate unanimously. Didn't get a hearing in the House. Might get one this go around once they gavel back in. So Senator Roger Nutt, again, our prayers are with him and his family as they deal with this serious and sobering diagnosis, without question. Hard to pivot from that, but that rounds out our program for today. We said we could have gone an hour. We were close. So we appreciate you guys listening to us today. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you're getting your audio recordings, make sure to give us that 5-star rating and review. Be sure to recommend this to your friends and family. Share this on your social media. Make sure you're following us, palmettofamily.org. You can sign up for our mailing list. That's where you're going to get all the updates on things we got coming up in the fall, because Labor Day will be here before we know it. I think we're, 3 weeks away from that?
September 1.
2.5 weeks. Yeah, college football season is like 14 days away. Thank the Lord. So there's a lot going on. You want to make sure you're connected with us on every single level. Make sure you're following us on Facebook and Twitter, X. Facebook, X, and Instagram. That's where you can follow us on all those social media platforms and stay connected with us as we continue to proclaim and push biblical values in South Carolina and be the voice for biblical values across our great state. Any parting shots of wisdom as we talked about the governor's race, the Senate race? Oh, I forgot to mention Annie Andrews.
Annie Andrews, yes.
Annie Andrews is running for... that's foreshadowing. Annie Andrews is the Democrat running for...
U.S. Senate.
U.S. Senate. She's the only one running.
So far.
I think she'll be the only one running.
Probably.
And they're going to put all their money behind Annie Andrews. Here, I'll just say this.
So be Jamie Harrison 2.0?
I was just getting to that. It's so interesting that one particular political party, in order to move up, you must lose.
Yes.
In order to move up, you must lose. Yes. We'll leave it there, but I just think that's going to be a very interesting, if there is a debate, because I think the days of debates are long over.
Yes.
At least outside of primaries.
Correct.
They're over. They're done. And so it'll be interesting to see if Lindsay and Annie share a stage at any point and how that goes. We'll be monitoring all these races. It's just getting started. It's just heating up. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Palmetto Family Matters Show.